But this morning we completed that section of four verses, 32, 3, 4, and 5. And now we're going on to the next section that forms its own little group. And you'll, just in a moment, you'll see how the two connect. They definitely connect what we discussed just previously and now. So I'm told the sound system works now. So the computer is checking. So let us chant together verse 36. I adore the same Govinda, the primeval Lord, in whose praise men, more imbued with devotion, sing the mantra suktas told by the Vedas. By gaining their appropriate beauty, greatness, thrones, conveyances, and ornaments. So, connecting the verses we just covered with this new section, which we're calling Bhakti, is further explained. So, in text 34, where we, if you recall, I highlighted attaining the lotus feet of Krishna is the goal of all the Vedas, ultimate goal. And it can be reached only by one process, by the bhakti process, Atma Bhaktau. So, please note that the gentlemen in the back, Nama Vrata, please note that the diacritics are not proper. Lord Brahma, you don't change it now, but please note so that we can correct it for the future. Somehow it's not correct. So that from the previous section, bhakti is the means to attain the lotus feet of Krishna. The lotus feet of Krishna is the goal. So now this section is describing those that get there. They reach the goal. What happens? What's the experience? What events transpire? What are the stages of consciousness that they pass through? Okay, that's the section. And this verse, text 36, starts really high. It's at the Bhava Bhakti stage. For those of you that are a little newer, Bhava Bhakti is almost at the top. There's nine stages of bhakti. And Bhava is the stage of experiencing ecstatic emotion in relationship with Krishna, and in that ecstatic bhava stage, one starts to understand the preliminary stages of understanding your particular rasa, or your particular eternal spiritual relationship with the Supreme. So that's an immature stage of bhakti, but that's where 36 begins. And it looks like the page is running off the bottom, the letters. So, at least in my version, to enter into one of the five rasas, the devotee begins to enter into one of the five rasas. It's not showing the letters.
It's because of the point.
Okay, okay, we'll work it out later. So we're now going to enter into some discussion about rasa means mellow, or a mood of feeling towards Krishna in love. It's the preliminary stage. Sometimes the bhava stage is compared to a bud, where the flower hasn't opened yet, but it's just about to open because it's at a bud stage. That's the bhava stage. And one can tell, you know, the color and other types of things just from the bud stage of a flower. In Bhaktisiddhanta's purport, he writes the following. The devotees, surcharged with the ideas of their respective service, this is again in the bhava stage, the respective service means, you know, their spiritual position, not just, I like to cook, or I like to do the accounting, or, you know, something like that. That's not what's meant by it. It's the spiritual form of a living entity and the natural spiritual emotion in one's spiritual form towards one's eternal service to Krishna. The devotees, surcharged with the ideas of their respective service, serve Krishna eternally and ultimately reach the goal of their respective ideals. They attain the real nature of their self, befitting their respective rasas, their glories, conveniences, seats befitting their sacred service, and transcendental qualities of ornaments, enhancing the beauty of their real nature. So, details and details and details start to become identified in the bhava stage. I could just go through really quickly. I'll do it really quickly and we'll come back. There's, according to Rupa Goswami, and found within the purport as well, there are five principal rasas, seven secondary rasas, 5 + 7 = 12. So five primary rasas are identified. Shanta, in this painting we see some Shanta rasa personalities, the cows, the tree, Krishna's flute, the river Jamuna, the lotus flowers, they all have this Shanta rasa position. We'll come back and go over it again. Dasya, the classic Dasya personality, is Lord Ram, his servant Hanuman, and others in Krishna's Leela, the florist, pictured on the left side, offering Krishna his garland as he enters into Mathura, and over on the right side, Samudra. So the demigods have that feeling towards the personality of Godhead. They want to render some service. Then there's this very wonderful elevated position of Sakya, rasa, friendship. Arjuna, for example, Krishna's friend, gives Balaram exhibiting friendship towards Krishna, and famous are the cowherd boys who have that relationship of friendship with Krishna, depicted in so many very beautiful paintings, swinging on swings, and playing games, and having lunch, and hearing Krishna. So they're hearing Krishna's playing on his flute, as the cows are hearing, and the tree is hearing, the birds are hearing. There's one description of when the birds, aside from their flying in the air, they fall to the ground, just stunned hearing Krishna's flute. Sometimes they're on the tops of the trees, and there are certain birds, cuckoo birds, they like to sing, but they stop singing. And they're listening very carefully to drink the sound of Krishna's flute entering their ears. We showed the picture on the right earlier, at least this is part of that picture of Gopal Kumar returning to Goloka Vrindavan. So that's friendship, and then there's parental affection, as Nanda Maharaj feels towards Krishna, and Mother Yashoda feel towards Krishna. And although he's the personality Godhead, this painting is depicting a pastime that's described where Mother Yashoda points to Nanda Maharaj's shoes, his wooden shoes, and she smiles and says, "Would you like to bring Nanda Maharaj's shoes?" So little Krishna toddles over, takes the shoes, respectfully places the shoes of Nanda Maharaj upon his head, and toddles back, holding the shoes of his father on his head. Now imagine if a little child did that in your home. Wouldn't it be so sweet? What to speak of the personality Godhead and his pure devotee? What kind of love is exchanged, happiness of love between Nanda Maharaj and Krishna? Some other paintings, a classic painting on our left side of Mother Yashoda holding Krishna in her lap, like mothers hold their children in their lap and have affection for their children doing so. What to speak of the personality of Godhead? And in the case of Mother Yashoda, she's not just a living entity that became perfect in parental affection. According to our acharyas, she's in another category than a living entity. She's Shakti Tattva. She's eternally situated in that relationship with Krishna. Here she's assisting Krishna getting ready. The cowherd boys are in the background. "Hurry up! Time to go herd the cows. The sun is coming up. Come on, Krishna, let's go." And Mother Yashoda's not wanting Krishna to go because of her loving affection. Balaram is tying on some ankle ornaments. There's his buffalo horn, and his stick, his lotus garland. Then there's Madhurya Rasa or Shingara Rasa. We're familiar describing this conjugal affection as Madhurya, Madhu indicating sweet, the sweetness of conjugal love. And Shingara is another term, it means the same thing. Shingara is like, we use this word Shingara when we have our Mangalarti song. Shingara Tan Mandir Marjanado, the spiritual master is pleased when he sees the devotees decorating the deity. That deity decoration is Shingara. So, the process. So it's the affection of the female associates of Krishna in their loving attraction for him. And a chief of all, of course, is Srimati Radharani. We'll hear in the upcoming verse how all the gopis are simply extensions of her, which is a very wonderful concept. We'll hear some more about it in just a moment. And it's not just Srimati Radharani, it's all the gopis. Here's a group of intimate gopis, but there's hundreds of thousands of such gopis, each with their particular skill and their particular relationship with Krishna. And together they have wonderful pastimes. This is a very beautiful painting illustrating one pastime. I got some enthusiastic feedback about hearing the pastime, so I'm going to narrate this pastime. This is a pastime that takes place at Manasi Ganga in Govardhan Hill. And many devotees have been to Vrindavan, and if you haven't been to Vrindavan, I'm sure you'll be enthusiastic to get the opportunity to go to Vrindavan. And when you go to Vrindavan, for sure, please go to Govardhan Hill, circumambulate Govardhan Hill, not in a motor rickshaw, but by foot. And it takes most of the day, if not the whole day, but it's ecstatic. Our great acharyas did this daily. You can do it once. And right in the middle portion of this very long, narrow mountain, Govardhan Mountain or Govardhan Hill, is a lake called Manasi Ganga. And Manasi Ganga is none different than Ganga. The formation of Manasi Ganga took place by a pastime of Krishna when Krishna saw Mother Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj preparing for some travel. So little Krishna asked his mother and father where they were going. What is the plan? What is this journey? And they said, we've just heard some katha, some descriptions about the glories of Ganga and bathing in the river Ganga. So we're accustomed to bathing in the river Jamuna, but we'd also like to take a journey and go bathe in the river Ganga. So Krishna said, there's no need to bathe in the river Ganga. I can make an arrangement for you to have bath in the Manasi Ganga. And they thought, oh, he's a cute boy. So, but Krishna insisted. So he made an arrangement with his flute to dig a big depression, and invited Mother Ganga to come and make her presence there. So Nanda Maharaj was a little doubtful. He's a cute boy. The Ganga come. So Krishna insisted, no, come, let's see, let's take our bath in Manasi Ganga. And as he approached Manasi Ganga, from the lake itself, Ganga Devi arose in her crocodile carrier. And then Nanda Maharaj became convinced it wasn't just child love, this is actually the river Ganga present in this lake. So they abandoned their idea to make a journey. And from there on, they just took their bath in Manasi Ganga whenever they had the inspiration or enthusiasm to go bathe in the Ganga. And during Krishna's time, 5,000 years ago, the Govardhan Hill was much taller. It is said nearly a mile high. That's a tall mountain. And on the side of Manasi, on the side of Govardhan, the lake was really big. Today it's quite modest compared to what it was. And the location of Manasi Ganga is practically right in the middle. There's Govardhan runs north and south almost. And so the gopis, when they wanted to go to the other side of the Govardhan Hill, one of the ways they did, rather than going all the way around, they just crossed Manasi Ganga by boat. Because they would do their milking of cows over here and take their products over to the other side of Govardhan Hill. by crossing Madhasikampa. So one time they were planning to do like that, and they only saw one boat. And the boat looked a little old, and the person was half asleep, this blackish personality.
It was Krishna,
disguised as a boatman. So, this is Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describing this pastime. That as they crossed, they got to the boatman, they asked the boatman, can you take us to the other side of Manasi Ganga? He said, sure, it's an old boat, but we can make it across the other side. So they loaded all their dairy products into the boat. And shortly after pulling away from the shore, the boatman started rubbing his belly and said, I'm really hungry. Can you give me some of your dairy products so that I will have the strength to cross the river? They agreed. This will be our care. Instead of paying you on the other side, you just take now. So he ate a lot. And after eating a lot, he said, tired after eating so much, I need to take a little nap. And they said, you take your nap on the other side, we'll throw you on the other side of this boat, row the boat ourselves. And as he started to row, by his own potency, very suddenly a cloud, dark cloud, filled the sky. Winds started to blow, and a storm came, and Krishna was tilting the boat a little bit to make the boat tilt. Water was coming in this side, and water was coming in that side. He said, this is a really dangerous situation. There's too much weight in this boat. You have to throw all your dairy products over the side of the boat, otherwise you might drown. And so they threw their dairy products over the side of the boat. And going along further, whoa, it's really dangerous. You have all these ornaments and jewels. Throw your bangles and everything over the side of the boat. Too much weight in the boat. Look at the water level is coming up. So they took off their bangles and threw off the side. And then Krishna said, not only that, because of all this rain, your clothes have become soaked, so you have to throw your clothes off the side of the boat. And Radharani put her hands on her hips and said, that's enough. We'll throw you over the side of the boat. And lunged and grabbed him and found Krishna's flute and went through his belt. And Krishna then smiled and the storm stopped and everything was nice again. And for the rest of the afternoon they forgot their dairy products. You see they're throwing the dairy products over the side. And they just enjoyed pastimes for the rest of the day. So, this is the conjugal rasa. And at the end, he says, the Lord Brahma says, fortunately, I didn't make this disclaimer. Fortunate souls chant the name, qualities, and pastimes of the Supreme Lord under the shelter of the spiritual potency. He's done. So I'd like to read a little bit something that Prabhupada writes that augments this message of this verse very nicely. Here's a description of Srila Prabhupada writing in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila 23:13, describing how one can go from the beginning stages of bhakti to the bhava bhakti stage, which this verse is speaking about. Devotional life is divided into two stages, sadhana bhakti, devotion and practice, and bhava bhakti, devotion and ecstatic love. Sadhana bhakti refers to the development of devotional service through the regular principles. The basic principle for the execution of devotional service is faith. Above that, there is association with devotees. And after that, there is initiation by the bona fide spiritual master. After initiation, when one follows the regular principles of devotional service, one becomes free from all unwanted things. In this way, one becomes firmly fixed and gradually develops a taste for devotional service. The more the taste grows, the more one desires to render service to the Lord in this way, one becomes attached to a particular mellow in the Lord's service, like we described. Shandadasya Sakya Vatsalya Madhurya. As a result of such attachment, bhava develops. Bhava bhakti is the platform of purified goodness. Purified goodness meaning without the mix of passion and ignorance. Bhava bhakti is the result of purified goodness, purifying oneself from those lower tendencies by the previous processes. By such purified goodness, one's heart melts in devotional service. Bhava bhakti is the first seed of love of Godhead. This emotional stage is there before one attains pure love. When that emotional stage intensifies, it is called prema bhakti, or transcendental love of Godhead. Nice summary of the stages of devotion. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu consistently, we find it in a number of places, especially Chaitanya Charitamrita, he compares the growth of devotion to be like a creeper or a vine that starts and gradually through the watering process of hearing and chanting, gradually grows and grows and grows, and the leaves come, and the creeper continues to grow, pierces through the coverings of the universe, enters into the spiritual sky, and unfolds at the lotus feet of Krishna, offering flowers unto the lotus feet of Krishna, and then the fruit of love of God. Lord Chaitanya made that metaphorical comparison. In Brahma Samhita, this is 36. In 55, mentioned it already yesterday. In verse 55, there's more description of the sadhana bhakti stage, which is presented in a summary way by Srila Prabhupada. How you go from being involved in simply fruitive work, a worker, a person trying to work hard to become the enjoyer of the fruits of their work, without any regard for goal or Krishna or his shelter. How one can go from that position, because that's what's in verse 54, to the position of bhakti. That's discussed in verse 55. So we're not going to go there. We'll wait till the verse 55 comes up. But this bhava stage, which is the fruit of that sadhana, there's a greater purification and greater attraction to be engaged in service, in a mood of service, in a purified state, without fruitive intention, without lethargy, without whining and complaining, but oh, the circumstances are tough. Woo, woo, woo. Just going on in devotional service with the intent of making offerings to Krishna. Somehow, despite the obstacles and the difficulties of material existence, coming to that platform, there's a stage where a taste for the devotion, and that stage taste becomes stronger than a particular affinity, not just for a particular expression of service, but the affinity for a mood of love when offering services unto Krishna. And that starts to take the shape of rasa, which is what this verse 36 is discussing. I'd like to read a little bit and to expand on these rasas, not too much. This is taken from, this is a translation of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, that's Rupa Goswami's book that describes rasa. According to the opinion of advanced devotees and learned scholars, a devotee in Sakya Rati feels equal to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is a relationship due to having, this is Sakya. I wanted to go before that to two others. Excuse me. Yeah. I'm going to back up and we'll discuss it about this bhava stage, because that's what the verse is. Before the rasa stage comes, the bhava stage is there. So here's a well-known verse: Shuddha Sattva Visheshatma. When the devotional service is situated on the transcendental platform of pure goodness, it is like a ray of the sunlight of love for Krishna. Not full sunlight, but it's a ray. At such time, devotional service causes the heart to be softened by various tastes, and it is called bhava, or emotion. In Nectar Devotion, Prabhupada describes bhava bhakti in the following words, quote directly from Nectar Devotion: by the process of executing regulated devotional service, one is actually elevated onto the transcendental stage, beyond the material modes of nature. At that time, one's heart becomes illuminated like the sun. The sun is far above the planetary systems, and there's no possibility of its being covered by any kind of cloud. Similarly, when a devotee is purified like the sun from his pure heart, there is a diffusion of ecstatic love which is more glorious than the sunshine itself. Only at that time is the attachment to Krishna perfect. Spontaneously, the devotee becomes eager to serve in his ecstatic love. In that stage, the devotee is on the platform Uttama Adhikari, perfect devotion. Such a devotee has no agitation from material affections and is interested only in the service of Radha and Krishna. So, Shuddha Sattva, pure goodness, and specifically again the influence of the Ladini Shakti and the Samvit Shakti, the ecstatic potency and the absolute cognitive potency of Krishna. They begin devotional service and they're fully matured at the bhava stage. Then they don't go away, they just become matured. And what is now situated in this relationship with Krishna, feeling stimulated by ecstatic energy of the Supreme Lord, touching the heart, because within the heart is this affinity anyway, so it just arouses. And then the expressions of devotion and service become joyfully done, not just regulatively done, but spontaneously, joyfully, ecstatically done. Rupa Goswami goes on to describe their symptoms by which the bhava stage can be seen. You can't, like, put somebody, hook somebody up to a Bhava meter and see if they, you know, is it a 1 or is it a 10. But there's external symptoms by which Bhava is identified. It's a very nice list. Just to hear it is nice. Forgiveness. Concern that time should not be wasted. Detachment. Absence of false prestige. Hope. Eagerness. A taste for chanting the holy name of the Lord. Attachment to the description of the transcendental qualities of the Lord. And affection for those places where the Lord resides. Temple, the holy place like Vrindavan. These are all called anubhav, or subordinate signs of ecstatic emotion. They are visible in a person, in whose heart the seed of love of God has begun to fructify. So because of time, I mean, there's wonderful description that's basically like an Eckhart devotion class. I can go through one by one. What are the symptoms of Shanta, Rasa, and how that distinguishes itself when another element is added, Dasya, servitude. So neutrality is symptomized, I'll just do it quickly. Neutrality is symptomized by honoring the fact that amongst all entities there's one supreme entity. And with veneration and awe, recognizing the opulences of that primal entity, I have a feeling of awe and veneration or neutrality. Of course, like this picture we saw, the cows and the trees and the flowers, it's not just awe. There's a mixture also. They wish to please Krishna. So that's add that element of servitorship. So then it becomes the next rasa, servitorship. So amongst Krishna's associates, in fact, some of the cowherd boys, there are certain ones that their mood is not friendship, their mood is servitorship. They like to bring Krishna's buffalo horn, but they like to bring the cow that went astray. They just like to serve Krishna. That's their happiness. And then when there's the intimacy along with the service becomes friendship. And that friendship together, each time something is added. When one is feeling oneself superior to and thus the protector of the less accomplished other individual, that's parental affection for the parents of Krishna, Yasoda and Nanda, and others who have similar rasa. And then when there's full surrender, whatever it is yours. Position, this is conjugal love. So that is a quick summary. So from the means of achieving the goal is bhakti, this verse is saying, in the maturing stages of bhakti, when they come to the bhava stage, and in the bhava stage there's some sense of one's particular eternal natural mood of love, well, it's already there within the soul and it comes out, and there's then a particular attraction of eternal service. And as indicated in the verse, the details include where you reside, what the nature of your service is, who your eternal parents are, and you know, the types of clothes you wear, and all those details begin to awaken in the bhava stage. So what comes after that? The next verse is the prema stage. So Let's begin text 37. And for your information, text 37 has the longest purport in the entire book. In fact, it's 12 pages long. So it's a sensitive subject. Therefore, Bhaktisiddhanta treats it with great sensitivity and elaborately lays out the whole picture. So we're going to take this in two parts. We'll speak something now on text 37, and then this evening we'll do a little review and continue on from there. I don't know if it's so well planned that in the evening we're going to be speaking about Krishna and the gopis, but that's what we're going to be talking about. Are we ready with the sound for the... Yes? Okay, here we go. Text 37. Here's the translation. I worship Govinda, the primeval Lord, residing in his own realm, Goloka, with Radha, resembling his own spiritual figure. The embodiment of the ecstatic potency possessed of the 64 artistic activities in the company of her confidants, or sakis, embodiments of the extensions of her bodily form. Language is a little difficult, but we'll break it down to see. Permeated and vitalized by his ever blissful spiritual rasa. So I'd like to now just share a little bit the connection between the previous verse 36 and this one. In verse 36, we heard Lord Brahma speaking about the living entities attaining the bhava stage, where they begin to enter into the five rasas. They begin to attain their appropriate paraphernalia and ornaments and decorations and conveyances and sitting places and everything related to their particular rasa. Now, in text 37, specific focus is going to go to one of those five rasas, and the diacritics, the font is not with it, it's Shringara rasa, the fifth of the five, the conjugal rasa, with special attention to Radha and Krishna's love. So we're way up there in subject matter, very elevated. And along with Radha's associates, the confidants, he calls them the sakis. Now, two more of these things, just because the composition is not helter-skelter, it's very organized composition. This text 37 is connected with the previous section, specifically this phrase, Ananda Chinmaya Sad. If you remember, that's the three features, Satchitananda, that make up the absolute truth. So, really quickly, I'm not going to go through these again because we've done it several times. Here's these four verses focusing on the form of Krishna being absolute, and therefore the limbs are interchangeable. the form of Krishna being apparently filled with contradictions, that is, he's the oldest and yet is eternally youthful, and so forth. By dint of his inconceivable potencies, he's able to do this. And one can understand his form through bhakti alone. The next text is through yoga and by empiric study, one cannot understand Krishna. And then the last was the Achintya Veda Veda Tadvati. The oneness of Krishna's energies with him, at the same time he's distinct as the source of those energies. So in this Ananda Chinmaya Sud is repeated several times, and his form, his vigraha, is the point of emphasis. And now this verse 37, it's Ananda Chinmaya Rasa. Whoops. Govinda's form has these three, Satchit and Ananda, and the rasa has two. Most prominent, of course all three are there, but most prominent, that which accelerates and inspires and awakens rasa, is two of those three. Krishna's Madini Shakti, or his Ananda, his ecstatic potency, and his conscious potency, or chit potency, that awakens devotional service, it awakens rasa. So, Ananda Chinmaya Rasa is in this verse 37. It's to show the theme and the connection of how these verses are sewn together, or strung together, on the thread of ecstatic love for Krishna. So now take a deep breath, because we're going to go into a little technical subject, which is right there in the first part of his purport, Bhaktisiddhanta's purport. He discusses there's another slide. Sorry. This is connecting 37, this verse, with the initial verse. But it's similar. It says, Ananda Chinmaya Satchit Ananda Vigraha, that's the first verse. His form, that's eternal, full of knowledge and bliss. Again repeated in 32, his form, full of eternal knowledge and bliss with dazzling splendor. The point that I've been emphasizing purposely again and again, there's no unwholesomeness in that form of Krishna. And now we're going to hear his rasa is similarly free from that same unwholesomeness, just as with his form. And misunderstanding arises when one thinks his pastimes are unwholesome, thinking he's like one of us, and what rules apply to us apply to him. But it's not so. So, now, Rupa Goswami, if you look in your book, Sri Brahma Samhita book, Bhaktisiddhanta's purport, in the beginning, he discusses this, and I'm going slowly, because he just like goes quickly. And there's some Sanskrit terms that those of you that know nectar devotion, you likely know these terms. And those that don't, the Sanskrit isn't what's important, it's just trying to understand the principle. So, rasa is a mixing of bhavas or ecstasies. This ecstasy mixed with, like, cooking. You know, a little zucchini and some rice and some potato and some spices, and cook it for a while and add something, and get a subject. So rasa is a mixture of different bhavas or ecstasies. So Rupa Goswami, using Sanskrit terminology that comes from the literature that he drew from, he didn't make up these terms, is from that portion of the Vedas that deals with drama. Just as there's Vedas that deal with medicine, Vedas that deal with architecture, Vedas that deal with governance, Vedas that, knowledge that deals with every aspect of life, there's also a portion of the Vedas that deal with how to awaken emotion in different ways through drama. Because that was the purpose of drama, is to awaken emotion towards Krishna. That's the Vedic purpose of drama. So the terms are taken directly from there. Sai Bhava is translated commonly as continuous ecstasy, or permanent ecstasy, or it's something that each one of us has within. It's already there, just like here's a seed. And this one over here, it's mangal, it's a seed. Over this one over here, it's a marigold flower. And this one over here, it's an oak tree. Or, you know, so within the seed is the potential of something. It's already set. You can put the seed over here, put the seed over there, but it's not going to produce, the oak tree seed isn't going to produce a marigold. It's going to produce an oak tree. It's already there in seed form. The Sai Bhava is, it's already there, which, but it becomes awakened through regulative devotional service, the touch of Ladini Shakti and Chit Shakti, and that which is already within us becomes awakened and it becomes manifest permanently or continuously or steady ecstasy. That's one type. Then there, from that one type, it extends itself further into another type, and it connects to something that's called Vibhava. Like some of you know that song by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Vibhava Rishesha Aloka Prohesha Nidrasha Diyuta Jiva. You go to Vrindavan and you attend Mangalarti in Vrindavan, they'll sing that song. Vibhava Rishesha Aloka Prohesha Nidrasha Diyuta Jiva. And then the stimulations of that Vibhava comes next, names of Krishna, remembering Krishna in particular aspects. Bolo Hari Hari, Mukunda Morari, etc. So, names of Krishna then recited because they stimulate ecstatic love of a particular type, depending upon your heart. Your natural Sai Bhava, there's the extensions in Vibhava. And that means that which stimulates ecstasy, there's steady ecstasy, and that which stimulates it further. And it's sometimes identified as Vibhava as the cause or the basis for relishing the matured stage of transcendental mellow. So now we have two bhavas, Vibhava and Sai Bhava. And not to complicate things, but Vibhava has two divisions. And those two divisions have Sanskrit names, they have meanings. Alambana. And Alambani means in which love appears. So like the devotee is Alambana. That's one part of Alambana. Alambana has two parts too. In the language of Bhakti Siddhanta, he calls it prop. So it supports the love. Prop. So it's, this has also two parts. The one, the abode of love, like that's the heart of the devotee. And then there's the object of love, and that's Krishna. But please don't forget, Krishna loves his devotee too. In that case, Krishna becomes the abode of love and the devotee becomes the object of love. And there's this exchange of love where one is the abode of love and the other is the object of love, and it goes back and forth, alternating. But there are divisions, nonetheless. For there to be love, there has to be two. Lover and beloved. So if you want to be a Mayavadi, forget love, because there's no love without two. Lover and beloved, and actually three. The exchange of love, three. So there's diversity in the realm of absolute. And it's very nice. And it's real, not imagined. And in this vipav, which has two divisions, one is alambana and the other is udipana, but that by which love appears. So udipana are stimulations of ecstatic love. That's a common way that we hear it. Bhaktisiddhanta uses that language also. Now it's a lot of language. Let's take a look at this nice painting of Radha and Krishna in Vrindavan, and we'll see where it all fits together. Bhaktisiddhanta's language is on the left. The vibhava, or extension, the vibhava of rasa is twofold, alambana, prop, and udipana. Of these, alambana is twofold, ashraya, supported, and vishaya, supporter, simply. Ashraya is Radha, and the extension of her own form, extensions of her own form, that's the gopis. So the gopis are the abodes of love for Krishna. And the object is Krishna. He's the Vishaya. The Vishaya, as the word is found in Bhagavad Gita, means the enjoyer. Vishaya vidivartante niraharashadeinam. That's where people that are in material consciousness, they try to enjoy matter. Enjoy the objects of the senses. Vishaya. It's holiday time, let's go party. Vishaya. Oh, it didn't happen so well. It rained. Or something. She didn't treat me very nice. Or he didn't treat me as me. He said some bad things. Woo, woo, woo. So, in the science of rasa, there must be two, the enjoyer and the object of enjoyment. And then, Krishna, we see Krishna playing on his flute in the background. And we see Radha reacting to hearing the sound of Krishna's flute. So the flute sound is a stimulation of ecstatic love. That's udipana, or the qualities of Krishna. Can be udipana, or some particular pastime of Krishna can be a stimulation of ecstatic love, udipana. Now that sound of Krishna's flute enters into the heart or into the ear of Radha, and then into the heart of Radha, and her sai bhav, her steady ecstasy, is stimulated. And she then feels an accelerated love towards the object of love. Now the cows, they're also hearing that sound. And according to our acharyas, when the cows hear the sound, the natural thing the cows do is they chew cud. But they stop chewing cud and their ears are erect, drinking in the sound of Krishna's flute. And they're stunned like statues. Just hearing the sound of Krishna's flute. So it strikes them in a different way because they have a different rasa with Krishna. And it strikes Radha in a different way. So the spiritual world is made up of this grand crescendo of stimulations of ecstatic love, like the qualities of Krishna, his compassion, his kindness, his cleverness, his words. And you read Nectar Devotion, you'll find so many, many listed. And there are things that the devotees do that stimulate Krishna's love towards them, like Radha. Now, who is Radha? Radha is the Ladini Shakti. She's the pleasure potency, the ecstatic pleasure potency of Krishna. So the verse says, we can break down the Sanskrit, but just do it simpler for now. The gopis are extensions of Radha. Like Krishna expands, and Radha expands. And Radha is possessed of artistic abilities. In fact, we can say it this way. The Ladini Shakti has 64 primary qualifications. And if you look in your purport from the Samhita, there's about 2.5 pages just listing them. All 64 of them. And these 64 Nija Rupataya indicates they manifest attributes from the ecstatic energy. Radha has all 64, and when she expands in different gopis, some have some of those 64, others have some others of those 64, and some others have some others of those 64. And then, you know, because there's hundreds of thousands, they have in different combinations. Now, close your eyes and imagine that you're Krishna for a moment. No, don't do that. To practice in that anyways. So, Krishna, he's the best of enjoyers. So, he really knows how to enjoy. He enjoys through his own pleasure potency. If you remember from verse number 34, the energies are inseparable from Krishna. Remember that? Eko vyasara tayatam jivadanda koti. So, as with the cosmic manifestation, so also with the spiritual realm. The potencies of Krishna are not different than Krishna. They're his potency, they're him. Like sunshine is of the sun. The Ladini Shakti is of Krishna. Perhaps those of you that were with us, as some persons have joined us a little bit after the beginning, but we saw that nice picture, Pranaya Kevi Kala Vilasam, we saw that nice, one of the nice pictures of Krishna's pastimes, where Krishna disguised himself as a goddess and went to visit Radharani. Remember that story?
Yeah.
And in the course of that story, Krishna wanted to hear directly from Radharani what her feelings for him are. And she told. And so the Leela is very nice. But part of what she told is, Krishna's in my heart and I'm in Krishna's heart, and that's forever. It's not just like, you know, a romance. It's eternal. And then she went further and said, actually, we're one entity. We're in two forms, but we're one entity. And then Krishna said, as this goddess, well, not that I disbelieve you, but if it's true, can you just think of Krishna and Krishna should appear? So Radha thought of Krishna, concentrated, and Krishna, who was at this goddess, took off his goddess disguise, and there he was, as Krishna, right in front of all the gopis. So there are actually two forms. It's very, very important in properly understanding Radha and Krishna. It's right in the introductory verses of Chaitanya Charitamrita. Very important, very famous verses. Radha Krishna Pranaya Vikritir Ladini Shakti Asmad Ekatmadab Api Bhubi Kora Deha Veda Gatavata, which means Srut Damodara saying, these two, there they are, Radha Krishna, they're eternally manifested in two forms, but they're one entity. One entity in two forms. Eternally. Like sun and sunshine. Two entities, but actually one entity. Sun and sunshine are inseparable. So Radha and Krishna are actually one entity, manifested in two forms. So when Krishna is having pastime with Radha, he's enjoying himself, his own pleasure potency. It's different than when boy and girl see each other and go, wow, she's nice, he's nice. It's different. It's not us. It's Krishna's energy, and we're thinking, wow, that's nice energy. But with Krishna, it's not like that. It's his own energy. And then the verse is saying, this verse 37, the gopis are expansions of Radha. As this Nandini Shakti is made up of these 64 things, so when Radha does these 64 things, it gives Krishna pleasure. That's the pleasure potency. 64 different things and combinations of those things. She knows them expertly. Like, you know, one of the things that Radharani is most known for, those that don't know so much about her, may know that she's expert at cooking. So, would you believe, the answer is yes, would you believe that one of the qualities of Radha that's in these 64 is her cooking? And there it is, number 24. You can see it listed right in your book. Chitra Shakha Pupa Bhaksha Vikara Kriya, translated by Bhakti Siddhanta, compliments of him. She knows the art of preparing varieties of salad, bread, cake, and delicious food. Now this is already a quality of Radha. It's part of the Radhini Shakti. And maybe you have heard, and if you case you have at that point to describe it, the pastime of Durvasa Muni giving Radha the benediction that she received, which is the Leela, which resulted then in when so here's the Leela. Radharani's a little girl. It's a Leela. She's Krishna's eternal pleasure potency. But in her pastime, she's a little girl, but she's with her gopi friends. And they're off in the fields of Vrindavan. Durvasa Muni comes by. So, who is Durvasa Muni? He's a partial expansion of Lord Shiva. Durvasa Muni is the son of Atri and Anasuya. From their worship, they received three sons, a partial incarnation each of Lord Vishnu, Lord Brahma, and Lord Shiva. And Durvasa Muni was their son as a partial incarnation of Lord Shiva. And everybody knew, look out, here comes Durvasa Muni, because he's Ashutosh. He can get really angry over nothing, and wow, he gets really hot and says something heavy, and but he can also, the other side, he can be easily pleased. That's me, Ashutosh. Easily pleased, easily angry. And here comes Durvasa in the fields of Vrindavan. And he approaches the gopis, little girls, young girls, who are playing. You know, imagine, little young girls playing in a field. And here comes Durvasa Muni and says, I'm very hungry. I want something to eat right now. As in, right now. And the gopi says, well, we'll be glad to prepare something for you, but we're off in the field. We'll go back to our homes and we'll be back in a big hurry. We'll be right back. He said, no, you don't understand. I want something to eat right now. So the gopis turned to Radharani. What do we do? And Radharani said, no problem. I'll just take some of the dust, mix it with some water, make some biscuits, in a matter of seconds and give the biscuits to Durvasa Muni. And the hand in Durvasa Muni goes, biscuits. And Durvasa Muni said, what? You expect me to eat this? And the gopi said, no, you don't understand. Radharani is really expert. She has this quality. Whatever she cooks is very nice. Try one. Just try one. So he forced himself. He took a bite of the biscuit. One of them. And it was so good. He finished that biscuit and ate all the biscuits. And then Durvasa Muni, being pleased by this wonderful quality of Radha, gave a benediction. And his benediction was, from now for the rest of your life, whatever you cook, whatever you prepare, it'll always be something different. It'll taste different to whoever eats it. And whoever eats your food, they will live a long life and be always very healthy. And you know, and the gopis were like, and they informed their parents. And when Radharani informed her mother, Kirtida was a very dear friend of Mother Yashoda. They were very close friends. So when Mother Yashoda heard, oh, Radha has this benediction. My dear friend Kirtida, can your daughter come and cook for my son every day so he'll live a long life and never have any disease? She said, sure. So, from little girl, every day, every morning, from Barsana, Radha would go to Nandagram, at the place where Krishna's father lived, and she would cook breakfast for Krishna. And in the evening, when Krishna came back, she would help Mother Yashoda cook the evening meal. That's a pastime. Because Radha already has this quality. He doesn't need a benediction from Durvasa Muni or anything. But it's a lila where persons are being engaged and brought into loving exchanges between Radha and Krishna. And that's Vrindavan. Everyone in Vrindavan, the cows, the cowherd boys, the trees, the river Jamuna, they're all engaged. Whatever their rasa is, there's this mixture of Sringara rasa. And as far as the friends of Radha, the gopis, they're immediate manifestations of her. They're expansions of her. They're not different than her in some portion of her. So when Krishna engages in pastimes with them, it's his own potency. There's no unwholesomeness in it. Get the idea? So now, Bhaktisiddhanta's language. All these arts, these 64, manifesting their own eternal forms, are ever visible in the region of Goloka as the ingredients of rasa. Remember from that chart, the udipan, stimulations. These are stimulations. When Radha, we can go through the list. But to save time, you can go through the list. Well, let's partially go through the list. Open your books, if you have a book. Otherwise, just listen with your ears. And we'll read some of these amazing 64 things. Art of singing. Art of playing musical instruments. Art of dancing. Art of theatricals. Art of painting. Art of painting the face and body with colored unguents and cosmetics. Art of preparing offerings from rice and flowers. Art of making a covering of flowers for a bed. Anyway, and on it, so the 64. And when Radha does these things, just like with cooking, it's not like, oh, she can cook. And, you know, when I was a kid, I learned how to cook. But, well, I'm sure it wasn't like Radha's cooking. Anyway, so each one of these things that she does, they're a portion of the Ladini Shakti. They make up the Ladini Shakti, these 64 things. So These are the ingredients of rasa. They stimulate love for Krishna when Radha sings. Love for Radha is awakened or enhanced, increased in Krishna. His feelings of love for Radha increase. But it's his own potency doing these things. And in the mundane sphere, that means here and on earth, Gokula, they have been unstintedly exhibited in the pastimes of Vraja by the spiritual or chit potency. So he wants us to know that these ingredients of rasa and the arts of Radha, it's not, you know, she went to culinary school and she learned how to cook. It's the chit potency. That's Radharani. Now, this is a little application exercise of what we just covered. You see here a very famous ISKCON painting of Radha and Krishna and the eight principal gopis. So there's going to be a quiz question at the end of this little section, and I'm going to ask you this question. Who's who in this painting? Because it's nice just to look at the painting. But now we're going to go a little more deeply and understand what verse 37 says. Here we go. One of the gopis pictured here, and this is a hint. You see the one sitting down holding a tambura. That's the one in this picture here. Okay. Tungavidya. According to our acharyas, Tungavidya is expert in 18 of the 64 arts, and they're specific. Those 18 include everything related to dancing, drama, and all the other things to do with the arts. So this is going to be one of the answers to the quiz question at the end. And when you show the painting again, we'll ask people to raise their hand at who's who. And one of them is Tungavidya. Then there's Induleka. And Induleka is her expertise, some of the 64 items that she's gifted with. She's the Radha's expansion, who's expert in occult sciences like palmistry, mantras, astrology, and those kinds of things, magical things. And she's also expert in all things to do with flowers. So, hint, when you see the eight gopis, one's holding a flower garland, who is that? Very good. I think you're going to get an A in your exam with a little coaching. And there's Rangadevi. One of the gopis is holding a tray that has what Rangadevi has here in her hand. She's expert both in controlling animals plus everything to do with perfumes and cosmetics. Kind of like what Kubja was doing for King Kamsa, Rangadevi does for Krishna. Rangadevi. Remember her name because you've got the ask for the quiz. Rangadevi. And then there's Champakamata. And she's expert in collecting fruits, flowers, and roots from the forest. And she amongst all the gopis, of course, they're very interested in Vraja and the living entities within Vraja, but she's chief. She's the protectress of trees and creepers and bushes in Vrindavan. She's their leader, and that's Champakalata. But she's also expert in cooking. Hint. One of the gopis is carrying a tray that has cooked foods to offer to Krishna. In fact, she's so expert, especially in sweets, that she has another name. Mistahasta. Sweet hands. And here's another. Using only the skill of her hands, she can artistically fashion things from clay. So she's, Champakalata's got a lot of skills. Here's another nice painting of Champakulata decorating Radharani's feet. Okay, so don't blurt it out, but raise your hand one at a time. Who's who in this picture below? Okay, one. Which one? They're all serving Radharani. Which one? He's going to go look at his notes. Hold on a moment. Okay. So there's the Duleka. Whoops. Oh, I didn't go to the next one today. There we go. That's her. There's the Duleka holding the flower garland. That's one out of four. But of course, they all have they're all extensions of Radha. Each with invested with some of these 64 in different combinations. Then someone else. Go ahead. Which one is she? Go ahead, say.
I think she's Champakulata.
Where is she?
She's the one on the right.
On the right, okay. What's she doing? Champakulata is Misty Hasta, she's sweet hands. She knows how to cook and make sweets very expertly. So she's holding like this. She's the one holding the offerings for Krishna, cooked, baked offerings for Krishna. Champakulata. Someone else. There's one boy in the back. He's very enthusiastic to share with us. He's looking at his notes.
I think that the one
Which one?
Next to Radharani.
What's her name?
Vidya.
Rangadevi, right.
He said the one who's sitting down.
Sitting down. Oh, I thought you said next to Radharani. Sitting down. And her name is? Tungavidya. Yes? Tungavidya. She's playing the tambura. Or whatever stringed instrument. Veena. And last one. Go ahead.
The one that's next to
Krishna.
The one that's, yeah.
Next to Krishna, on Krishna's right shoulder. Her name is?
I think it's
Rangadevi. She has some aromatics, some nice scented oils and offerings for Krishna like that. So you get the idea. Each of the gopis, not only the eight, but each of the gopis, they're extensions of Radha. As Krishna extends, he can do that. One light can light another candle. From that candle, Radharani also has the capacity to expand, and she does. And these expansions are her confidants or sakis. They're expansions of her. They're embodiments of her. Not like, you know, they're non-entities. They're entities. They're persons with personalities and feelings and, you know, emotion and likes and dislikes and so forth. Personality characteristics of them, but they're simply expansions of her. Just like me, we're living entities, we're expansions of Krishna, we're tiny, ooh, so tiny, expansions of Krishna's marginal potency. We're individuals, we have different personalities and likes and dislikes and things like that. So, this is a picture of the spiritual world, helping us to understand the conjugal love, or Shringara Rasa, or the relationship of Radha and Krishna in the spiritual world. in the language of Bhaktisiddhanta's purport, although the Lord Absolute and His potency are one and the same, self-same existence, still they exist eternally as separate entities. We discussed this already. They're one entity in two forms. But the two forms, then by combination, they make rasa. And specifically, Radha is this Shringara rasa. In both the ecstatic energy, that's Radha, and the transcendental Lord Krishna, there exists Shringara rasa. It's not that Krishna is, in the language of the Vedas, raso vai saha. And saha is a pronoun that means that. So the absolute truth is rasa. Now Krishna includes everything, because he's the source of everything. So within Krishna is everything. Within Krishna is this Shringara rasa towards Radha. And within Radha is Shringara rasa toward Krishna. And there's things that Krishna do. He's, by the way, expert of these same 64 things. Like that one pastime that I narrated, Krishna started singing, disguised as Shama Saki. And when Krishna started singing, Radha was feeling ecstasy. Oh, my dear Saki, you're so kind. You've broken my anger and my sulking mood. Just by your wonderful singing, I'm so indebted to you. So when Krishna sings, Radha feels ecstasy. And when Radha sings, Krishna feels ecstasy. Why? Because within them, there's already existing the Shringara rasa. And then there's stimulations of that. These 64 things. And then the mixing of the 64 things makes four varieties of rasa. Isn't it very nice? Very nice. And the quality of both of them, he concludes, is inconceivable. So we can talk about it. But you know, to experience it is beyond our conception. Now I'll just do one more thing before we take a break. And this is now directly from Bhaktisiddhanta's purport. After he covers, you know, this little science of rasa section, you know, Vaibhav and Saibhav, Vaibhav, Saibhav, Alambana, Udipana, all those terminologies. He lists these 64. He's now going to explain, and he did it already actually, in Goloka, these are there in their fullness, in this Krishna's earthly pastimes, they're eternally going on also. Eternally going on also. Like even you may go to Vrindavan and not see Krishna's pastimes. But Krishna's pastimes are eternally going on also. So now Bhaktisiddhanta is going to take us on this comparison which existed in text 3. Now we're getting in terms of rasa in text 37. There's no difference between the two abodes. Similarly, there's no difference in the rasa of these two abodes. And if anyone sees a difference, well, it's a matter of their realization, it's not a matter of fact. Because the fact is, there's no difference. You had that question. And he's now going to explore it and explain it. There's no difference. Although there appears that there's difference. And then he, we're going to read, a little section from the purport that begins, hence the realization of Goloka appears in proportion to eligibility. So open your book to page 37, verse 37, and see if you can find that section.
I did mark it in my book and I can't find it just now. Can you show me? Huh? Show me, just point it out. Wait. All these arts. Where's the hence?
After all the 64 colonies are listed,
did somebody find it in your book? Show me. No.
It's in 66th paragraph.
How does the paragraph begin?
It is only
souls.
Ah.
It's the fifth paragraph.
It is only those fettered souls who are excessively addicted to worldliness. That's the one?
Yes.
That are devoid of devotional eye. Of them, some are enmeshed by the variegatedness of the deluding energy, while others aspire after self-annihilation, you know, nihilists, etc., etc., etc. Where's the hints?
Just two sentences.
The third sentence in that paragraph is hence.
Hence the realization of all of
our powers. Ah! Okay. Hence the realization of Goloka appears in proportion to eligibility due to the degree of one's self-realization. In other words, some people see this, some people see that, some people see another thing according to their consciousness. If you're going to have the consciousness of being able to see Goloka in fullness, that is proportionate to what your realization. Your realization is proportionate to how your receptivity of the Ladini Shakti and the Chit Shakti, you know, to just like what we're doing right now. We're hearing some very elevated subject matter. Some persons in the room may be scratching their heads saying, "What?" And some persons in the room saying, "Well, I..." And some persons in the room may feel, "Yes." So, according to our trajectory of our spiritual progress, we're going to understand less or more. And the fullness is made possible according to the receptivity and eagerness to receive the transcendental reality, or be situated in our relationship with Krishna. So, seeing differences between upper and lower Goloka, Goloka Vrindavan and Gokula here, there's actually no difference, although there appears to be difference. Because that was discussed earlier in text 5. I'll share with you some of the things that we heard in text 5. In Goloka, there's no demons. In Gokula, there's demons. Kamsa sends demons to kill Krishna, and Krishna kills the demons. In Goloka, there's no birth pastime. But Mother Yashoda and Nanda have the sense Krishna is our son. But there's no birth pastime. Here there's a birth pastime. So it appears there's difference. But he's making the statement, actually there's no difference. And the realization of the fact that there's actually no difference requires realization, because it certainly looks different. But from a bhava or emotion, transcendental emotion perspective, there's no difference. Now, we're going to say much more about that in a bit, and then again this evening. This is kind of taking his purport, his 12-page purport, in chunks or in segments, and trying to digest what he wants us to hear, what he wants us to do, to be revealed to us. So let's go on just a little bit. Bhaktisiddhanta writes, there's no distinction between the visible and non-visible pastimes. What does that mean? Visible is when Krishna appears, and everybody can see his pastimes. That's his visible pastimes. Kamsa can see. The washerman can see. Unqualified people can see. Duryodhana can see. You know, any fellow can see. Not qualified people can see. That's his manifest pastimes. The unmanifest pastimes are in Gokula. I'm pointing up in the sky because that's upper Goloka, the spiritual world. We can't see. And the second is after Krishna withdraws his pastimes from ordinary people's vision, we can't see those pastimes going on, although they're eternally going on. Like the residents of Vrindavan, the six Goswamis were able to see Krishna's pastimes. When we go there, we don't see. The qualified person can see. So those are the unmanifest. So the Sanskrit terms, those you like Sanskrit terms, prakat and aprakat, manifest and unmanifest. So his statement is, there's no distinction between the two. And the appearance that there's a distinction between the two, he says, Jiva Goswami has given this nice term, vid brahma vivas. So, what does that mean? Joyous pastimes by the medium of seeming error, or as the contrivance of Yogamaya. What does that mean? The Sanskrit, vilasa, is a term that means pastime. Like Damodar vilas, the pastimes of Damodar. You know, the binding of Krishna. Binding of Damodar, Krishna, around the waist. Dama Udara, around the waist, the bound of the rope. And vilas means joyous pastimes. It's a particular term, like lila means pastime. Vilas means the same thing, but it has a connotation that's like jubilant, joyful. Especially. So, vilas, that's the meaning of that word. And then, vid brahma, vilas. I'll just go forward a bit and. Here's the four defects of every conditioned soul. You know, this is in what? It's in Nectar of Instruction. No, it's in Sri Ishopanishad. Those of you that teach Sri Ishopanishad, yes? For every living entity that's conditioned, by the way, that's us, there's defects. And the first listed in that four of defects is B-H-R-A-M-A, prone to make mistakes. That's a defect. Like this question about, you know, unwholesomeness and wholesomeness. So this is an unwholesomeness that we have. We have a tendency to make mistakes. We'll come back to this slide again, but when you put V-I, the prefix, the Brahma, it amplifies it. It's very mistaken. Big error. Vidrama, vilas, are, now we'll go back. This is Jiva Goswami's language, where Bhakti Siddhanta is quoting him, saying, where it appears that there's a difference between Goloka and Gokula, it's only in a seeming sense of error that there are such differences. Something that's different from what it appears to be. We'll give an example. A few examples. Well, one example that's really easy is Mother Yashoda and Nanda, they feel that Krishna is the son, although he never takes birth as their son. Well, that's an error.
just like a big error, vidramavilas. But they have that mood of love where it seems that he's their son, at least to them. And everyone else also accepts because it's part of the internal potency. Or as the message up top of that says, the action of Yogamaya. Everybody feels, not only Yashoda and Nanda. I mean, certainly they would know if Krishna's their son or not. And they feel he's their son, although he never took birth. So that's the Brahma Vilas in the spiritual Goloka realm. And then when Krishna performs his pastimes, he who is unborn is born. Well, that's a seeming error. He appears to be born, but he's eternal, he's never born. So it plays itself out differently in Goloka, and it plays itself differently in the earthly pastimes, but in both cases it's the Brahma Vilas. Got it? There's an example. Here's another example. We're going to do three. Second example is demons. In Krishna's earthly pastimes, it seems that there's demons. Surely it seems like demons. There are these living entities sent by Kamsa. They go to try to kill Krishna. Krishna gives them the KO and they're finished. And they're liberated. The soul goes into the position of liberation because being by the hand of Krishna, they're killed by Krishna. But actually there's no demons because how can a demon come before the Supreme Pure? Can't. And in Goloka, there's no demons. But the way it's described in Gopal Champu is from time to time one unknown person comes running through Vrindavan and calls out, "Watch out! Here comes Aristasura!" There's no Aristasura. And this unknown person, who is he? It's the Yogamaya potency arranging this emotion. So everyone goes, "Oh, Krishna, help! Please give us shelter." And Krishna gives shelter. But there was never, Aristasura never comes. But it's a bhava. And thinking Rishasura is coming, it's an error. Vibhrama Vilas. Something seemingly different from what it appears to be. That's his language. So that's two examples. Birth, demons, and now the third example is marriage. In Goloka, there's no marriages. The gopis do not marry, and there's no children between the husbands that they haven't married and them. There's no marriages. But there's this bhava that they're married, although there was no marriage. Got it? So, to allow the sense of intimacy, of love between Krishna, who they are expansions of this Ladini Shakti, they have this bhava, the sense that they're married, and then they enjoy pastimes with Krishna as if enjoying outside of marriage. Which, in this world, that's irreligious. But in that world, it's a lila. It intensifies the feeling of love. Bhakti Chaitanya Maharaj, in his class in Vrindavan on Brahma Samhita, which I've listened to 18 times, he describes it this way. Some of you are married. And before you were married, when you started meeting your spouse and thinking, "Woo, woo, woo," it was really nice. And then you got married. And then something happened. And that something that happens according to the language of Bhaktisiddhanta is the sense of proprietorship or ownership. You're bound by vows of marriage to the marriage partner. So with that sense of ownership, it's not the same as before you were married. "Oh, she's so nice. Oh, he's so nice. Woo, woo, woo." And it's not just getting to know each other, that the emphasis that he's making in rasa is the distinction of ownership. So there's the owner. I'm committed. I must serve my husband. I must take care of my wife. It's my religious duty. By vows of sacred marriage, I do these things. And then there's this other kind of love. So for us, the other kind of love is immoral. It's enjoined in any scripture and religious teaching of the world. It's immoral. So we don't do immoral things. But for Krishna, there's this excitement or added happiness in that kind of love. So there's no marriage, but there's the bhava that there's marriage. The brahma-vilas. Then here, there's marriages. We're going to hear some more detail about that. I don't know if I should do that in an evening class. What's the tendency of the people that come here the next day? What are we teaching? Maybe I'll skip it and do this extension tomorrow morning. I think that's what I'm going to do. We'll continue this tomorrow morning. We'll go to 38 tomorrow. So, here, when Krishna performs his earthly pastimes, not all the gopis are married, but some of the gopis are married. But you know how that marriage took place? It was, here's the detail. During the stealing of the calves and cowherd boys and putting them in the cave by Lord Brahma, and he came back, and there we saw the picture. He came back and saw the calves and the cowherd boys. And then Krishna showed this Narayana forms, and then after that Narayana forms, all the Narayana forms disappeared. It was just Krishna standing there, specifically, holding in his left hand a lump of yogurt and some fruit, because he was going to eat with his right hand. Just staring at Brahma, unblinking eyes. And Brahma fell to the ground, paying his obeisances, and offered beautiful, beautiful prayers to Krishna. And then Krishna didn't even answer him, because he wanted to go back and finish his lunch with the cowherd boys. For him, that's the greatest happiness, more than these wonderful prayers. They're wonderful prayers. But the happiness for him is greater, being with the cowherd boys having lunch. So during that period of time, our acharyas described, this isn't a Bhagavatam rendering, it's from some other source. But during that period of time, Brahma's few moments of being away, 1 year had passed. Actually, it isn't Bhagavatam. 1 year had passed. And during that 1 year, Krishna was fulfilling the desire of the mothers of the cowherd boys to have Krishna as their son, only he appeared to be exactly like their sons. Exactly. What mother couldn't tell who their son is from an imposter son? Well, if that expansion is Krishna, and the voice and all the little subtle features of their faces and their bodies and their stature, exactly. Because the one that was their son came from Krishna too. So for 1 year, they had Krishna as their son. And all the calves became the children of the cows. But those calves were Krishna, because the cows also had this affection for Krishna. They wanted to have Krishna as their calf and give their milk to Krishna. So he reciprocated with them and became their calf. And the description is there, when the cows were grazing on the side of Govardhan Hill and the calves were down below, they started running down Govardhan Hill. You ever seen a cow run? Not very often, but I've seen a cow run. It's really humorous. And they were running and galloping down the hill of Govardhan, and the cowherd men were chasing the cows down the Govardhan. Come back, come back. But as they got closer and closer to where the boys were, They completely forgot everything out of their affection for the boys because their boys are Krishna. And the calves began drinking the milk of the cows because the cows wanted to give their milk to Krishna. So during that 1 year of this pastime of Krishna being the cowherd boys and Krishna being the calves, Krishna made a proposal to Nanda Maharaj. He said, this is a very auspicious time. In our culture, young boys are married to young girls at a very early age. They don't live together, but they know that they're married. So this is a very good time. Let's have all the cowherd boys married to all the cowherd girls. Nanda Maharaj liked anything that Krishna said. So he said, let me check with Purnamasi. Purnamasi said, great idea. So marriage is held. And all the cowherd boys, Krishna, married all the cowherd girls, fulfilling their desire to have Krishna as their husband. Cool, huh? And then when 1 year passed, the real cowherd boys returned from the caves, and by Yogamaya's influence, they forgot everything that happened. But they heard from their parents that you were married. They just accepted that they were married to the cowherd girls. And then when they were old enough to be married, they lived together as husband and wife. But some of them, like specifically, it said about Abhimanyu, because when the boys were married, Radharani married Krishna, who was appearing like Abhimanyu. Remember that painting of Jatila with the broom in her hand, one was swat. Abhimanyu came back in the house. Get out of here. You're a pretender. I know who you are. You're Krishna in disguise, my son. Get out at once or I'll smack you. So, Jatila was the mother of Abhimanyu. So when Radharani was of age, all her, since she's a little girl, she's been cooking for Krishna every day. So she's married to Abhimanyu. But she goes to cook for Krishna every day. And then there's all these pastimes of Radharani going to cook for Krishna, even when she's married. But our acharyas say, Abhimanyu is the so-called husband of Radharani. He didn't even come close enough to Radharani to touch her shadow. So-called marriage of her so-called husband. Because who can be married to Radharani? The internal potency of Krishna, but Krishna. Well, he married her. In that Vima described. So the so-called husband is Abhimanyu. Anyways, a little mystical. But that's this Vibhrama-vilas. Joyous pastimes by the medium of seeming error as the contrivance of yoga maya. So now there's these two terms, Swakiya and Parakiya. And what they mean is, Swakiya is husband and wife, they're married. They have a relationship of husband, wife, and marriage. And Parakiya is the other kind, where they're not married. And they have an intimate relationship with one another, boy and girl. Or married and having a relationship on the side with another man, who's not her husband. No, in Vedic culture, aside from the rest of the world, that's sinful. It's a no-no. So when Krishna performs what is considered to be parakiya rasa, moralists go, oh my God. You probably heard it somewhere along the line. Tell a little story. Rabindra Swarup Prabhu. Some of you know Rabindra Swarup Prabhu. When he became introduced to Krishna consciousness when he was in college, as did I. Only he completed his education, as I did not. And Prabhupada's instruction was to do so. He completed his PhD in philosophy. So he and I were initiated the same day, the same place, the same time. We've had this very nice relationship for a long, long time. Except some stupid things that I did in the course of our service together. But other than that, nice relationship. And he described this in a public forum once, where he knew that Prabhupada liked to have dialogue with scholars and professors and government people and, you know, that caliber of individuals to help influence them to understand Krishna properly. So Rabindra got this bright idea that as PhD professor, he could arrange a meeting between Prabhupada and this PhD professor. So professor agreed, Prabhupada agreed, they had their meeting, and as they sat down, the first thing the professor said was, "Swamiji, how can you worship a bad person, a debauchee, that mixes with other men's wives? How can you be a worshiper of such a person?" Without blinking and hesitating for a moment, Prabhupada said, "He is not the debauchee, you're the debauchee." Because you're thinking that this is my wife and I can enjoy with my wife. But the fact of the matter is, that spirit soul is Krishna's part and parcel, and you're trying to enjoy Krishna's part and parcel as if she's yours to enjoy. But she's Krishna's to enjoy, and you're the debauchee. Professor didn't know what to say. In fact, Prabhupada writes the same thing in Krishna book. That's another one of the slides coming up. But it's not easy to understand. If you have a material conception of life, forget it. If you're a gyani, forget it. Only through the medium of devotion is it possible. Even then, you know, we hold on to our worldly sensibilities that say this is right and wrong. We want to confine Krishna to our parameters, but it's not so, it's not accurate to do so. And therein lies a problem. So a major part of the purport of text 37, which will continue tomorrow morning, not tonight, is his discussion on this Swakya Parakya topic. There's a lot to say about it, and it's important to understand it, both for your edification and, you know, perhaps relieving your heart of some uncertainty, or just like looking the other way because I don't want to think about it So there's a way to clearly explain, and if you don't understand it, read it again, listen to it again, but if the explanation is provided very, very, very eloquently and precisely by Bhaktisiddhanta in this purport. The second part is, you may encounter somebody somewhere along the line who says, like the professor said to Srila Prabhupada, or they may not say it so grossly, but, you know, in a questioning way or a challenging way, saying, you know, what about this? How can... There are Vaishnavas that they worship only the childhood pastimes of Krishna and not the other pastimes of Krishna, because the other pastimes of Krishna, as far as they're concerned, are bad. Here's one from Mahatma Gandhi. Mahatma Gandhi said, there are two Krishnas. You know, Krishna's a name. Somebody can be named, you know, Tom and Bill and Bob. So Krishna's a name. And there's, as far as I'm concerned, there are two Krishnas. There's Krishna who instructed Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita, and there's this other one. This one that's immoral, and I don't like him. And if I have to accept this one Krishna, this immoral one that I don't like, then I give up my Hinduism. My Krishna is the da 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 da. That's Mahatma Gandhi. What to speak of, you know, a fellow on the street. Or, you know, a pious Hindu that understands, you know, what is to be done, what is not to be done. What is right and what is wrong. What is moral, what is immoral. Thinking the standard that I have for my conduct, which is the correct standard, such a thing is immoral. And when Krishna does, the worshipping Krishna, doing immoral things. So, we follow this, the importance of wholesome, unwholesome language of Bhakti Siddhanta. So, let us continue tomorrow morning. And let's see how far we get. Because it takes some time to do this properly. Any discussion? Yes. Two questions.
So the first one is, what's actually the difference between the bhavas and the rasas? Like,
what's the difference between?
Bhava and rasa.
Bhava? Mm-hmm. Bhava means an emotion of ecstasy. It can, you know, at this stage it means. Bhava can have a more gentle or general meaning. Have you heard the phrase Ishwara Bhava? You know what Ishwara means? Ishwara means controller. Do you know any people that have a spirit that they like to be a controller? Yes, Maharaj. You won't mention any names. That's Ishwara Bhava. It's a bhav, it's a state of mind, a feeling, an inclination. Like that. So there's other adjectives that can describe bhava, but it's, you know, a feeling or emotion, a condition of life. So in this case, what our topic is the stage that just before love, it's ecstatic emotion. In relation to Krishna and service to Krishna. Rasa is a particular type of attraction of love and service. This type, that type, that type. Okay? Your second question.
In the Sanskrit, this Anandachinmaya Rasa.
Yeah.
So why is there a start in that? So
why does it what?
Why is there a biblical start so the rasa is not eternal?
When it says Ananda Chinmaya Rasa, why doesn't it say anything about sat?
Ah. Okay. Turn the microphone on. I explained, I'll say it again slowly because you're asking. The form of Krishna identifies all three, including Sat. Rasa, I said it, but Sat is also there. But with Rasa, especially prominent are these other two. And therefore, Ananda, Chinmaya, Rasa. So, all in the spiritual world, all three are present all the time. But if you recall, maybe you heard the seminar, previous one, in the manifestation of Goloka, described in those first three verses, or 3, 4, and 5, it's the sat potency of Balaram, or his all-accommodating potency that manifests the abode of Krishna, the forms in Goloka. So there is the prominence of the sat, or Sandini potency. The others are there, but this one is prominent. Got it. So with rasa, these two are especially prominent. And like your question, where when Ladini Shakti is missing, and when it's just studying, well, they're trying to reach toward the Chit Shakti, but not getting it, actually. And especially, the Ladini potency is missing for Jnanis. They don't really feel devotion for Krishna. They're just searching for the sunlight with their flashlight. Where's the sun? I know it's around here somewhere. And Krishna Bhakti is missing. You got it? We're okay with the answer? Okay. Yes.
Maharaj, there are two questions online. First one is from Rajahari Prabhu. This is apparently, the context is based on a conversation with another senior devotee. He says, I had mentioned that a devotee becomes aware of his connection to Krishna in a rasa, and he worships him in that rasa. The senior devotee told me that it is not true. Kindly resolve.
Oh, I don't know. Because what he understood is what I understood. So he'd have to go ask that other senior devotee. What's the next question?
Next question is from Lavanya Mataji. She asks, When Krishna, in the form of all the cowherd boys, married the gopis, who did Krishna, in his own form, marry?
There's no indication. That's a nice question. No indication. Nice question. Yes.
So, Maharaj, this is based on Sundar Pashupati Prabhu's question from the morning session. So, I just wanted to clarify my understanding with respect to the Nityabaddhas. So, in this, the Nityabaddhas are like they are eternally conditioned, but then they have an opportunity to go back to God. So, when they go back, they become Nityasiddhas, right? Because as Krishna promises.
Sadhana Siddha or Kripta Siddha?
So, but then Krishna promises that, yet they have gone from the town, so they will never come back.
That's correct. Either Nitya Siddha, excuse me, either Sadhana Siddha or Kripta Siddha. Not Nitya Siddha. Nice try though.
Thank you, Maharaj.
You're welcome. Okay.
So you said that there are no birth pastimes in the Goloka Vrindavan.
Yes.
So but then, what about the childhood pastimes?
There's childhood pastimes. No problem. No problem. But there's no pregnancy in birth.
So, but then another following question to that one, like, then there are no children, right? The parents, I mean, seemingly they get married, but then there's no children. But then, what about the childhood friends of Krishna? Like, what is their relationship?
These are detailed things that our acharyas haven't elaborated on, so I'm just speaking more by inference than by our acharyas said. But by inference, there's this bhava that these are our children. Period. Now, how does it work when, you know, lived souls become perfected and enter into the spiritual realm? How did it work? Where did this guy come from? Where does this cowherd boy come from? How does he become the son of this mother and father with this name and so forth? No technology is described, but it's, you know, the contrivance of the Yogamaya potency. Right? Somehow they, by Yogamaya potency, accept this child. So like, you know, in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita doesn't say who accepts Gopal Kumar, who then is given Sarup, another name. How does he become, you know, who's his mom and dad? Where, when he goes home at night, where does he go? Doesn't say. He stays with Krishna for some time, but eventually he's got to go somewhere. Doesn't say. But somehow by contrivance of Yogamaya potency, one accepts. That's all. Without the technology.
Thank you,
Mama. In the back. Some ladies have some questions. Oh, you have it. Oh, go ahead. Aditi, go right ahead.
So we know about the qualities of Krishna, but how would you use them to explain to someone else that Krishna is real and like you believe in him? But how would you use it to explain Krishna?
Depends on the person. I mean, some people have an issue of just, you know, that if they're either over on this side of atheist or even a little more softer of agnostic, I'm not sure, then your mission is to help them understand, well, it's plausible to accept that there's a person, that there's a supreme person who does, who from whom everything comes. Depends on the situation, whom you're interacting with. Yes, Trinity.
Maharaj is actually from my mom.
Your mom?
Yeah.
Text message, huh?
Yeah.
Okay.
She was asking, like, can a devotee have more than one rasa relationship with Krishna according to particular moods they carry on different times in the Bhava Bhakti stage?
There's no indication of that. Nice try. Here's something that Tamal Krishnamar said in this relation. It's not exactly responding to a question. He said that he specifically asked Prabhupada. You know, it's a little bit like Braj Vihari's question, if Braj Vihari is still online. He asked, is our rasa fixed? Or can our rasa become something and then become something else? Like that. And Prabhupada, he expected Prabhupada to say fixed. But Prabhupada's answer was, in the spiritual world, things are not static, they're ecstatic. Indicating that through association, this can become more like that. So in response to Braj Vihari, you know, his understanding matches my understanding. At the same time, association makes a huge difference. Just like we're associating with Lord Chaitanya and Lord Chaitanya's teachings and Lord Chaitanya's followers of his teachings. So by that association, it inclines us towards Vraja Bhakti as opposed to Vaikuntha Bhakti. By association, it's only natural. Yes?
Hare Krishna Maharaj. I have a question from the morning session.
Okay.
About Krishna being present in each and every atom in fullness. So we also have Paramatma in our heart.
Yes.
When we talk about in a special way, like soul and super soul residing in our heart, and I also read about the dimensions and all that stuff. So how is that form of Krishna different from the From Krishna present in each and every atom, which could be in the cell or other things. So is there any difference between Paramatma in my heart and Paramatma in the other parts of my body atoms?
No. Because he's just one entity. How many Paramatmas are in this world? However many people there are in this world, whatever the number is, 50, or whatever the number is, 40, or whatever the number is. How many Paramatmas are there? What? How many atoms are there? Who can count them all? How many Paramatmas are there? One. Did that answer your question? You look surprised.
I didn't understand that.
Okay, try it again.
how to do it differently.
That nice painting that we saw of Super Soul, kind of like with the banyan tree in the background, and Super Soul is in the heart of all those different forms of life. So all those different forms of life, there's a dog, there's an elephant, there's a Brahmin, there's a laborer, etc., etc., a tree, a plant, a bird. Super Soul is in the heart of everyone. How many Super Souls? One. One entity in all hearts of all of those beings. Yes? Is that clear or not clear?
Yes, but is it not that I have Super Soul and she has Super Soul? And
same one, same Super Soul. You know the different Super Soul A, Super Soul B, Super Soul C. The same Super Soul. Anyway, pass the microphone, because that's the way it is. And that same Super Soul is within every atom, too. One Super Soul. He's all pervasive. Although within the heart of everyone. Don't limit him, please. He's not limited. Yes?
So, Radharani's main rival, she's also an expansion of Radharani?
Sure. Why not?
So why is she
why not?
Highly different?
It's just for the pleasure of Krishna, that's all. That's everything in the spiritual world is for the pleasure of Krishna. And there's only one reason for anything to exist, for the pleasure of Krishna. Why Jatila, who seems to be opposing the loving relation of Radha and Krishna? Well, she's not an expansion of Radharani, but she's part of the internal. Her position is arranged by Krishna, however he arranges things. Yes?
In addition to that, is Abhimanyu.
In addition to a microphone, too, huh?
Hare Krishna. So in addition to that, is Abhimanyu, Jatila and Kotila, they are also there in Gokula, Goloka, or just in Gokula?
I don't know. If they're there, it's not as the husband of Radharani, if they're there.
And one more thing, I just wanted to confirm that I got the right thing. So when the person, unknown person, runs and says that there is a demon, Arshtasura is coming, that is in Golok.
Yes.
It's not in Gokula, there are demons.
Oh, yeah.
Gokula, there is.
Register of thumbs, look at
it. Right, and in Golok, it's just the pastime thing.
Now,
just the power.
Back to your earlier question, this is again referring. I don't have a scriptural reference for this, but with reference to Bhakti Chaitanya Maharaj's explanation, and he's very careful about what he says, you know, it's not, doesn't just like make up something because it's cute. So he describes, in relation to the bhava that there's husbands, similarly someone comes running into the scene and says, look out! Abhimanyu is coming. And, you know, Govardhan Mala is coming. That's the husband of Chandramali. Govardhan Mala. So, those personalities exist, apparently. But, you know, it's only, at least, whether they exist or they don't exist, it's a bhava that there's marriages. So that they have to, marriages have got to be somebody that they think they're married to. Well, I guess it doesn't have to be. It could be like, I think I'm married, or I don't have a husband. Or I don't have a wife. I think I'm married. By the influence of Yoga Maya. So I'll ask more knowledgeable Vaishnavas than myself on such subjects. I certainly want to avoid like flying in the sky with speculations about things that's way over our head anyways. But I will entertain some more questions. In the back, yeah. All the way in the back. Put your hand up.
Hare Krishna, I just have something. So you said there are no demons in Goloka, but also when the demons are killed by Krishna in Gokula, aren't they liberated? So if they can't go to Goloka, where do they go?
Did you get it?
But the demons in Gokula, when they're killed, you said that they get liberated.
They get liberation.
So where do they go from Gokula?
Oh, they go, they two different situations. They can merge into the Brahmajyoti because they don't have, depends. They could be reinstated in their eternal position, or they could be just liberated, merging into the Brahmajyoti, and it depends. How's that for an answer?
So they don't go to
They can, but not necessarily. Like, you know, Putana is an example. You know who Putana is, right? A witch. She wanted to poison Krishna. So Krishna gave her liberation, but accepted the motherly affection that she had to be the mother of Krishna and gave her a position in Goloka. So it depends. Okay. Up front here. Keeping you busy, huh? Present ground. Okay.
Guru Maharaj, would you kindly explain the word jnana conveyances in text 36?
Which one word?
Jnana conveyances. Translated as conveyances.
36. I don't see the word you're looking at. They're mentioning it. Yadbhava bhava dhariyo, that one? Which word are you referring to?
Jnana.
Oh, there it is. Okay. Jnana. Conveyances. You know, in Vrindavan they ride in bullock carts. In Mathura they ride in other chariots, and you know the queens may be taken in palanquins. You know, appropriate conveyances. Yes.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
My question is: so we talked about many stories about Krishna's pastimes.
Yeah, are they nice?
They are very nice. But what is the present time of Krishna?
What is the present?
Time of Krishna. What's his present time?
What is he doing now?
Oh. Well, the good news is these pastimes are eternal. So, you mentioned, I'll say it slowly, something that I already mentioned. There's manifest or visible, and then Krishna performs those pastimes, and then he goes on according to our devotional teachings, another universe, and then another universe, and there's pastimes eternally going on in some universe. Like Prabhupada gives the example of a spool, like, you know, a thread. Thread is kept on a little thing, a spool. So, at, like a spool, we pull from the spool and the thread keeps coming and keeps coming. And so, somewhere, Krishna's performing his birth pastime. It's like somewhere the sun is rising. And then the sun is rising. And then the sun is rising. And always somewhere the sun is rising. And then the sun just comes over the horizon. Somewhere the sun is coming over the horizon. And then somewhere it's midday. Somewhere it's midday. Just so, like the movements of the sun, the pastimes of Krishna are described as they're eternally going on in some universe. One pastime after the next pastime. In sequence. That's his manifest pastimes. Now, after Krishna leaves, his pastimes manifest pastimes are ended, there is his eternal, like what he's doing now, his eternal pastimes are eternally going on. Now, if you and I went there, let's go sometime. We'll go to Vrindavan, and we'll look around and see if we can see Krishna's pastimes. And we probably won't see Krishna's pastimes. But those, there's a verse coming up, those that have the eyes of love for Krishna, they can see, because his pastimes are eternally going on. That's what he's doing now. He's doing eternal pastimes now, but they're not manifest to us unless we have the eyes of love. And then, reciprocating with our love, Krishna will, may, reveal his pastimes. And we can participate in those pastimes.
A follow-up question. So, the pastime only happen at Vrindavan, or it's happening everywhere?
Nice question. Well, Krishna can appear wherever. There's no restriction. There's no law that says he can't. He makes the laws, and he breaks the laws. So he can appear wherever he wants. But he appears where there is love. And especially in those places that are his eternal abode, or eternal dham, or place of residence, he appears there. So maybe you remember, I showed this nice picture of this drawing of the yantra of the lotus with Radha and Krishna in the middle and the petals, and then the white region outside, quadrangular region. That's other places where Krishna performs pastimes, and Maitre has it as his eternal residence. So commonly he appears there. Because there, it's not a bodily, I was born in China, or I was born in the United States, and therefore, yay China, yay United States. It's not like that. It's his eternal abode. So he has affinity, naturally, for his eternal abode, and vice versa. So generally he appears there. But Krishna can appear anywhere, where there's love of his devotee. And he can exchange loving feelings. He can talk and do things with his devotee. No restriction. But it's from his side, he does where there's love. And I could narrate some pastimes where Krishna showed himself outside of Vrindavan, or outside of Mathura or Dwarka, those three places in that depiction of Goloka, where there's love for him. How's that?
Okay.
But when I was in China, go ahead, take the microphone. During the national holiday, I made the same presentation in China. Somebody said, is there some reason why he only appears in India and he doesn't appear in China? And I said, well, you know what? If all of you devotees here in China develop such love like those devotees in Vrindavan, Krishna may appear in China. Because that's where he appears. They went, yay, let's get love for Krishna, and they will come to China.
I have a question regarding Krishna's marriage.
Question of marriage?
Yes.
Krishna's marriage or someone else's?
Krishna's marriage. Okay. Of course.
Thank you.
So his wife, Rukmini, 8 million wives, and the 16,100
yes.
other
yes,
wives.
Yes.
They were all part of Radha Rani, right?
Yes.
So they were all expansions of...
yes, according to Rupa Goswami, with a big exclamation point at the end, yes. It's a very interesting Bhima. I invite you to read Vidanta Madhava someday. It's found here. But the answer is yes.
Were they the expansions of the Haratani Shakti and the Chitta?
Yes. But the bhava outside of Vrindavan is different. The bhava in Vrindavan is sweeter. And Krishna is attracted to that bhava, but still the answer to your question is yes. You done?
Yeah.
Okay. Who's next? Someone up here? Go ahead. I think we should take this last question.
This is from Virajita Singh Madhavi. She asks, is one of the lessons from Krishna's confidential pastimes that sees the contradict moral behavior in the material world that we should not imitate him but recognize his place as supreme enjoyer and our place as his servant?
Very good. We didn't get there yet, but very good. Now, the problem, one of the big problems, is imitation. Imitation of a holy person. Imitation of Krishna. Imitation without qualification is awful. It discredits the genuine thing in the minds of worldly people. So definitely don't imitate, recognize Krishna's exalted, unique, singular, special position, and honor him for that. As the supreme enjoyer. Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki?
Jai.